Lunacy is available on the EPR label, which stands for Evil Penguin Records,
yes.
Which sounds great. Lawrence, I read on the Met site an interview with you. You said the countertenor voice needed more rest than most voices. I was curious about that.
Well, yes. I mean, because we're basically singing on what's called the false chords, but you're basically singing on one third of your vocal cords, which are stretched rather tight. So, in a sense, you know, you could say it doesn't exactly work out this way, but, you know, we can sing one third the amount of time before we get just as tired as another singer. And also, we're not speaking all the time in that voice. So those muscles aren't getting that kind of exercise. So we kind of have to do, I suppose, a little bit of training more often. We have to be even more disciplined to maybe sing in maybe 20-minute intervals and then have a rest. So really kind of short interval training,
okay.
I suppose, if you want to think of it.
Yeah.
use an athletic metaphor. you know, this opera Orfeo that I'll be singing in Toronto, it's 80 minutes long, which is for an opera, it's very short. And I'm sure your audience will be delighted. It's probably one of the shortest operas anyone will ever go to, with there's no intermission. But I'm on stage the whole time and basically singing for quite a lot of that time. And so for a countertenor, this is quite a big deal. Maybe for a Wagnerian soprano, it's not. But for me, it's I have to really take care of myself physically and vocally and really pace myself through that. That being said, you know, like anything, it's training to make them strong, make the chords as strong as they can. And I feel like I'm singing as I have more endurance than I've ever had, which is really exciting to kind of be in the sweet zone, which is kind of where I am now.
It's so wonderful that the COC is finally performing Orfeo. This is the premiere for the company.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Listening to it in preparation for the season, I was struck by understanding that it was one of Gluck's reform operas and what he was doing with it, by how wonderfully expressive the music is. And I can't imagine what it's like to sing it. I imagine it's a great joy too. Are there any particular moments in Orfeo which have special significance for you?
It's all so wonderful, and it's so wonderfully condensed. Like I said, it's really an opera where everything has been stripped down to its bare minimum. And I think probably one of the most beautiful parts is the middle section where he goes down to Hades and then the underworld and convinces the shades, the spirits, to let him through the gates into Elysium, which is where Eurydice is. And there's this beautiful change in the music and this incredible orchestral interlude with flutes and oboes and Orfeo kind of sings, he's kind of one instrument among many in this beautiful texture, and it's really quite a beautiful moment right before he meets Eurydice, and then it gets dramatic and angsty again. But there's this wonderful pause where you can just take a very slow breath and just enjoy the beauty of Elysium and the beauty of the orchestra and the beauty of the music. And this kind of, in German would be a Luftpause, before it goes back into the drama. And that's a great moment for me. I really enjoy it.
Why don't we listen to that now? So we're going to listen to a recording by one of your favorite countertenors.
Jochen Kowalski.
Right.
Who was, he was really the pioneer for operatic countertenors. The first kind of modern countertenor was Alfred Deller, for whom Britten wrote Oberon, Midsummer Night's Dream. And he really started, he was self-taught in the 40s and 50s. But then, in East Germany, in East Berlin, at the Komische Oper, this chap, Jochen Kowalski, started reviving Handel operas. A director called Harry Kupfer came up with these wonderful productions, and they started reviving this early repertoire. And he, I would really say, is probably the first operatic countertenor who really had a sound very different from the kind of English choral sound of countertenors. And I think he was wonderful on stage. He has a wonderful color to his voice, and he is really the operatic pioneer, you know, from whom all of the kind of operatic countertenors come. And I really admire his work. And this was one of the first recordings I heard of him.
Thank you.
Florence, what are some of the other roles you're working on now?
I'm just about to go and do Mitridate, which is one of Mozart's very early operas, and that I'll be starting on that in Munich in June, right after this. So I'm working on that at the moment, and it's very interesting working on that, especially while working on Gluck at the same time, because the Gluck Orfeo was written in 1762 and represents such a departure from the normal conventions of opera seria. I mean, Gluck was really trying to kind of clean up opera. And then going to the Mitridate, which admittedly Mozart wrote when he was 14, which is just really a bog standard opera seria with all of the cadenzas and ornamentation. And it was written in 1770, 8 years later, but in a sense feels like it's a piece that was written earlier than the Gluck. The Gluck is so forward-looking. And of course, Mozart eventually would be a pioneer. Mm-hmm. But at the age of 14, he was really writing something which was very much a part of its time. And that's very interesting. I did do an even earlier Mozart piece called Apollo and Hyacinth, also when I was a student, and that was written in Latin, if you can imagine. I'm going to be recording that this August with an English group called the Classical Opera Company, and that's a very interesting piece. But this will be really the first time the first time I've done a Mozart opera. There aren't many of them with countertenor roles on stage at a really wonderful house in Munich.
If you could have any composer in history write a role for you, who might it be and what would the role be?
Wow.
I mean, I think it could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, I love Benjamin Britten's music so much. In some way, could I rewrite history and have Peter Peers be a countertenor?
Oh,
how wonderful
imagine?
Would that be for me to have Peter Grimes and Death in Venice written for countertenor, you know? I suppose if Benjamin Britten could have written another, I mean, there is a role in Death in Venice for a countertenor, but wouldn't that be wonderful to have all of those great Peter Peers roles singable by a countertenor? It's often frustrating for me because I would love to do written songs, but mm-hmm. so many of them are for tenor, and it's actually trickier to transpose tenor into countertenor than it is maybe soprano or even baritone. So I would love to go back and ask Benjamin Britten to write a piece for me. That would be wonderful. You know, people also often ask me, what is your dream role? You know, your favorite role? What's the role you really want to do? And I often say, you know, that role probably hasn't been written yet. You know, there's composers out there. There's lots of pieces being written. Like I said, Jonathan Dove, I think, is really wonderful what he's doing. And he loves the countertenor voice and kind of understands its possibilities on stage, and I love to do roles that are dramatically meaty, and so I think my dream role probably hasn't been written yet, which
That's
is kind
exciting.
Of exciting in
yeah.
a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. Possibilities are endless. Do you keep up the sleight of hand? What sort of things do you do when you're not singing?
Any, no, I have not
tricks?
Practiced magic. My trunk of magic tricks lies dusty in my mother's attic. And I'm eventually probably going to hand it down to my daughter when she gets old enough to kind of to do those things. What do I do? I read a lot. I'll tell you what my big quote-unquote hobby is at the moment. I've decided to start a PhD in musicology. So I kind of do that part-time. It keeps me a little bit busy. And there is quite a lot of downtime as a singer. And it's something I always wanted to do. So, and I love Handel's music, of course. And so I'm studying his oratorios. And that's a long-term part-time project. And it's not at all interfering with my singing, and it's something I can dip in and out of, and with the internet and great libraries everywhere. Every city I go to tends to have a great library, and there's great Handel collection. I was just in Paris, great Handel collection there. The U of T library is quite good, has all the Handel manuscripts on microfilm, so that's handy. And then with the internet, I can get access to journals, etc. So that's that kind of occupies my mind when I'm not on stage.
That's wonderful. You've come back as doctors also.
Yes. My father's a medical doctor, so I suppose, yes. I think he'll be very happy.
That's great. Oh. But in closing, we'll listen to another track from your Lunacy CD. It's John Dowland's In Darkness Let Me Dwell. Can you tell us something about that?
It's probably John Dowland's most famous song. It's an exquisite, almost perfect kind of fusion of text and music, and it's very sad, very melancholy, but very, very beautiful.
And this is with Shizuko Noiri on the lute. Well, Lawrence, thank you very much for joining me today. Visit our website at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and other recordings online. This is Jana Wichlow. Please join me again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by DECA, the opera label.